Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
Well, you assumed wrongly, Mr. Brian McKay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the award-winning, we've never won a single award, the very informative, people bitch about it, the one, the only Believe You Me podcast with the great Lionheart, Anthony Smith. Anthony, I know you're a tired man today.
Yeah. The East Coast shows are tough on us, man. We get done with the post show at 2:45, and then you go back, you pack. My car pickup was at 4:30 for a 6:30 flight, right into wrestling and basketball tournaments. So I was on no
Father
sleep
of the
yesterday.
Year. You know, people think, you know, look at these guys on TV. They've got it easy. They have no idea. You don't just get yourself to the airport. You've got to wake up. Then you got to have someone take your bags and put it in the car for you.
Right.
And when you sit in the back of the car, you've got to sometimes close your own door.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy.
Right. And sometimes you have to bring your own beverages in the car.
Wow. Now tell me this. This is going to blow my mind. Did you have to bring your own suit?
I had to bring my own suit.
Wow.
I did.
Do you know what I mean?
It's amazing.
Turmoil. But this is going to make you a better fighter in the long run. This kind of adversity. Oh, dear. Welcome to the show, everybody. UFC 297. Great night of fights at the weekend. Of course, it was all about that main event. Before we get into that, how was the crowd?
The crowd was incredible. They were really, really good. They were there early. They were loud. They hate Justin Trudeau. They were chanting fuck Trudeau the whole time. The Canadian fighters kind of had a tough night. They went 2-7. All the Canadian males lost. So that happens a lot of times in these countries, and then the crowd's dead the whole time after a couple of their hometown guys lose, but they would get right back up for the next one and then sad again and right back up happy. It was fun.
Well, you've got to, because when all your countrymen are losing, you know what I mean? Then there's more pressure on the next one, so you get up for it. But you know what? And I am not in any way talking any crap about John Anik, because John Anik's the man as a human being, as a professional, as a commentator. He's brilliant. He's the best. But Rebecca actually said a comment, because John Anik pointed out, he said, so all the Canadian women have won tonight, but all the men have lost so far. And Rebecca goes, I bet he wouldn't say that if it was the other way around.
Oh, no.
And I just thought that was funny. Of course, there was nothing in that at all, but shout out John Anik, the absolute goat. Where should we start? We'll just start with that main event. We've got to.
Yeah.
Dricus du Plessis, Sean Strickland went at it over five rounds. Of course, if you follow them on Instagram, the war is not over. They're still going on, but we're going to get into that in a bit. We'll talk about the fight, of course. Dricus, the new champion of the world. Before we break it down, what did you think, Anthony, when it went to the scorecards? I didn't know. I'll be honest. It was one of those. I had Sean winning the first. I thought he looked brilliant. Dricus in the second. It was really close. He had some takedowns, but didn't do much with it. But he was pressuring. Third all day, four all day for Dricus. Five, I thought Strickland maybe could have got that one. It was a really close fight. I'll break it down why I don't have a problem with Dricus. But first of all, give me your take.
So I'm kind of catching a lot of shit for this, but I really thought Sean won four rounds. I really did. I didn't. That's not saying that it wasn't a close fight. I thought they were very, very close rounds. But at the end, I thought it was 4-1 Sean. I'm not mad that du Plessis won. I don't think it's a robbery. I don't think any of that, but I did think that Sean Strickland remained the champion. I didn't give a lot of weight. I didn't put a lot of weight into the takedowns because he didn't do anything with them. He didn't control them for any amount of time. there was no damage. There was no submission attempts. I just didn't see a lot with that. And especially with the new rules, takedowns being position changes. I thought that maybe, I think Strickland was so dominant in the first. I think sometimes you look at the next couple rounds, specifically the second, I see a lot of people gave Duplessis the second, but I thought that he just looked a lot better in the second. So sometimes I think that can skew your view and say, wow, he did a lot better that round. I think he won that round. Like, maybe he just did better, you know, and it's just closer. But I don't have any problem with Duplessis getting the win. I when you keep fights that close, they kind of can go either way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad, because we've kind of got a difference of opinion, so it's good. It makes for interesting conversation. Again, very close. I honestly didn't know who was going to get it, and I don't have a problem. I don't have an issue with the scoring at all, and congrats to both of them, actually, on a great hard-fought fight. But I do think Strickland lost three and four. Might have lost two, maybe. And I think the thing was, you know, the three Ds is how they score the fight. You know this: dominance, damage, and duration. And then after that, they start taking in lesser qualities, you know, like octagon control, aggression, and things like that. And Sean always fights behind that jab. And it's a beautiful jab. And it's laser accurate. It's powerful. It busts up the face of Dricus Duplessis, of course. But Dricus was throwing bigger, heavier shots. I mean, those head kicks in the second round that he was getting through with, the body kicks. Sean did a great job of checking a lot of the leg kicks. But I think when it is close and one guy is going forward, backing the other man up, swinging big shots, you know, overhand rights, they didn't all connect. A few did, though. Certainly the head kicks connected on a couple of occasions. Sean took them well. I think that visual, and certainly he's pushing the pace, he's being the aggressor, he's controlling the octagon. He got a couple of takedowns, I agree. He didn't do shit with them. So there's no really, they're not worth much, if anything, to be honest. But when you put it all together and you're conflicted as to who won the round, those smaller, minor little things kind of come into play. So I'll be honest, though, as I say, when they were calling it out, I had no idea who they were going to say.
You know, I think, and I'm on the opposite side of those smaller details. Like, I've seen, and I was watching, and again, I'm watching like really, really, really closely, almost to where I'm, sometimes maybe I don't pay attention to the entire round as a whole. I'm looking at the individual little, like the transitions and the little tiny exchanges. So sometimes maybe I do lose track of how many times that happened over a round. Or so maybe my view is absolutely, there's a chance that it is skewed. But I looked at Duplessis throwing really, really big, and Strickland always sliding in these little shovel uppercuts or these little jabs or these little tight hooks and like taking glancing shots off the arm and rolling away from it. And to me, I thought he was winning those exchanges. But again, like, we're talking razor close differences here. Like you look at those exchanges and maybe he takes the big glancing blow, but it moves his body a little bit and his body reacts to it differently. And I'm seeing Strickland kind of just death by a thousand little cuts with all those jabs. And it just looked like he was landing more efficiently. The bigger shots definitely belong to Duplessis, but I just thought there were so many more of, especially in the first round. I thought Strickland looked magical in there. He looked really, really composed. And I think a lot of questions were, was he going to be too emotional? I thought he answered that right away in the first round. Three and four were kind of the four for sure. Duplessis won three. I thought was really close. I thought one and five were clearly Strickland, and I thought he won two and three.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the thing is as well, you know, for Strickland, I mean, the jab was great, but what I would suggest, and far be it from me, but, you know, in a fight like that, he does fight behind his jab, and he's kind of conservative with all his other weapons. You know, Dricus was throwing, you know, a variety of shots, you know, and Dricus has his own weird kind of unique style and rhythm, you know, because it's, you could say it's sloppy. Ian Garry did. We'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah. And Sean is that jab is beautiful. but he doesn't follow up with it too much. Yeah, of course, he throws that right hand on occasion. But I think when you start getting into a really close fight like that, you can't allow yourself to back up as much. And I think he's got to add to the skill set or the toolbox that he's using. Of course, he's got the skills. He knows how to throw combinations. He knows how to throw head kicks. And I'm sure when he's on the tie pads, he looks magical. You know what I mean? But the jab is the primary weapon. On the numbers, I was just looking for him then, but I couldn't find it. I think on a few of the rounds, Sean's ever so slightly ahead. Round one, he was leaps and bounds ahead, but some of the other ones, he's just a little bit ahead. But how do you equate the damage? You know, right. Dominic Cruz Saturday was saying, well, look at the face of Dricus, you know. But the thing is as well, it's not always damage that you can see. You know, like a jab to the face, granted, we saw the damage on Dricus's face. Sean didn't have too much. All right, granted, as the fight wore on, he had a cut. But in round two, up until that cut happened, he didn't have a mark on him. But some of those head kicks landed pretty flush, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's damage there. Just because it's not visible, right? Just because it's not visible doesn't mean the opponent doesn't feel it. Doesn't mean your bell just hasn't been rung. Doesn't mean you haven't got ringing in your ears and you're like, holy shit, I don't want to take another one of them. Do you know what I mean? So it's not, when you talk damage, and this is... It's not just visible damage. It's damage that you, and I guess if you've got a rock solid chin, and it, no problem to me, well, it still scores. Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So yeah, no, listen, it was a close fight. It was a close fight. Let's throw it to the panel. Go ahead.
Dean Thomas asked me a really interesting question Saturday night, or maybe it was Brett. Brett Okamoto, I think, asked me the question, not on air even really. And I wanted to ask you, and then I'd give my answer. What would you change about Sean Strickland's game? Because he does find himself in these really, really close fights like this.
Yeah.
Because he maybe doesn't have that next level, that next thing. Not that it's not a next level.
That you are precisely correct, and it's a good question by ESPN's Brett Okamoto. Shout out, Brett. Because I was talking about this in one of my videos recently. That's what he needs, because he kind of has one game plan. He doesn't go for takedowns, right? He's not the most wildly aggressive on the feet. Of course, you know, he's had some great moments when he stopped Abus Magomedov, beautiful stoppage against Israel Adesanya, dropped him in the first and walked him down. But a lot of the time in these close fights, like Jared Cannonier, like that one against Dricus, and that's kind of what I was alluding to a second ago, you have your plan A. And if that's working, if you're teeing off and you can't miss with that jab and you're getting through with the right here and there and the front kicks to the stomach and all the rest of it and you're keeping him at bay and you're frustrating him and you're clearly winning the fight, that's great. But when it really starts to get, you know, confusing for the judges, you know, you've got to have a plan B, even a plan C, you know. So I just think he needs to go forward more, and I think he just needs to use that jab to set up other things. They call the jab the key to the door. That's the entry point to a lot of other combinations. You can jab, you can throw an inside kick, you can jab, you can throw a high kick, a right hand, a left hook, anything you want, you know. But I just think he needs to put more numbers together, to put it simply and basically.
And that's essentially what I said. I guess I got more, even more specific. If they could work it, because the way his style is, he is very up and like straight up and down. His feet are close together, which gives him the ability to move quickly and counter and lean back and he gauges his distance. But even something that I've been working lately, or like Mark really kind of started putting into my game a while ago, was really sitting down on my counters. So if he could still have that long jab, still be elusive, but every once in a while kind of, you know, ground himself in the middle of these kind of combat, because he does counter very well, but there's not a lot on them, because he's always kind of in motion and moving and slipping. And but every once in a while, if he just really grounded himself and sat down on something hard and then got back to what he was doing, what we normally does, I think that would make a world of difference for him.
And for Dricus as well, it's not like he doesn't have nothing that he needs to change. There was a few things that he was, in my humble opinion, as analysts, we're not talking shit about the fight. It was a great fight. Well done to both men.
These are the same conversations we have off air.
And these would be conversations if you were in a gym, what your coach might say and things like that. And believe it or not, before you start in the goddamn comment section, we know what the fuck we're talking about. For Dricus, I mean, if you're fighting somebody like Sean Strickland, that when you watch him, you know he fights behind the jab. And it's a beautiful jab. You've got to have a defense for the jab. You've got to drill that. The obvious defensive ones are a block, the parry, head movement, and footwork, right? We weren't seeing, but the feints mainly. Draw that jab out of Strickland. Make it look like you're going to go get into the jab, and then when you're bringing the arm back, that's when you go in. And when he was going in, a lot of the time, the first couple of punches that he would throw, whatever they were, an overhand right, a left hook, whatever combo it was, Strickland a lot of time would get that jab in, right? But you got to go again. He needed to have the initial attack, and then it's what my old boxing coach used to call phases of attack. You need a second phase. The initial phase is just kind of your setup to get in, to get that initial jab from Strickland, and then go again. Back him up against the fence, and then let rip with the hands. So Dricus, I mean, listen, it was a great fight, and I am.
Yeah, they were.
I'm not insulting or critiquing. I am critiquing.
Yeah,
constructive criticism.
Yeah, we're just talking about what we've seen and our views from it, from our experience level. The only thing I would add with Duplessis, honestly, it was my only critique I had of him, even on all the pre-shows. He's either defending or he's striking. He doesn't counter a lot. Like he's defending, and then when he's done, or whoever is throwing strikes at him is done, then he goes. But if you start to go in the middle of that, he'll stop and defend, which is not bad. I mean, but the next level of evolution in your striking to continue to grow to a high level is to be able to do both things at the same time, which is like, I don't know, Volkanovski does it better than anybody. Just being able to strike, defend in those transitions and counter before they're done. But it's harder for big guys to do because some of those inside situations are very dangerous. You look at the significant strike, records, like none of those are held by people above 185 pounds. It's hard to do because you punch someone that many times at the size of us, you're going to kill people.
Yeah. I tell you what, though, the wrestling of Dricus really, really impressed me. Sean's not an easy man to take down like that.
No.
For the most part, when he was fresh, he got Sean down almost every time. I think it was 6 out of 9 takedown attempts. Equally, Sean was so good at just banging up to his feet, just immediately getting back to his feet. Very, very impressive. The takedown didn't do much.
Something Robert Whittaker couldn't do.
Or take Dricus down?
Well, no, like to get up like that.
Oh, yeah.
The first takedown, he held him for 19 seconds. Robert Whittaker couldn't get up in 19 seconds. So I know that sometimes we look at this, you hear people, I see what people say online when we're doing our research. Sean Strickland was kind of just a fly-by-night champion and he's not really that good. He did something that Robert Whittaker couldn't do. And we all know where we hold Robert Whittaker in terms of his abilities and skills at the middleweight division.
You know, when I used to spar Strickland, he is tough to hit. He's very, very tough to hit. And he has a weird, it's kind of awkward when you're in there. You know what I mean? And it's when you watch, you might not think it doesn't look all that. But I'm telling you, when you're in there, he's very, it's a weird rhythm. It's offbeat time. And he does a very good job of blocking with his forearms, stays out of range. Listen, he'll be back. And he might be back against Dricus du Plessis because if you haven't seen it, the war of words is continuing. We have a delivery for one Anthony Smith.
We do.
Amazon. Here we
go. Coffee.
Yeah, I could do with coffee as well. I could do with people shutting up out there. Don't know what's going on. So if you look here, this is what Sean posted. And he said, Sean actually said, for those audio listeners, I didn't take the coward's way out and tell the doctor I couldn't see and got a no contest. I didn't tell the doctor I couldn't see and get a no contest. The only reason why you took a round from me is because I couldn't see. I won that fight. The world knows I won that fight. The belt they gave you will never make you a champion. Enjoy. They had to stitch through muscle to get it closed. Thank you to everyone for your support. Anyway, and then Dricus comes back and he says, well, why don't you cry about it again? Right? And I got to say, that's a bloody good response from Dricus. Yeah. Call it what you will. I know there's a lot of Sean Strickland fanboys watching this and you're like, you're a prick, Bisping. They're talking shit. He's trying to undermine his victory. But first of all, give me your thoughts on the cut and what Sean is saying.
I can't argue with him. It was very clear during the fight that the blood was bothering him. Like the cut was affecting him. As soon as the cut happened, he wasn't. And Dricus was smart. He attacked more from that side when Sean kept wiping the blood out of his eye. Like you try really, really hard as a fighter to not wipe the blood away, because you don't want to draw attention to it from either the referee, the doctor on the outside, the commission, but you definitely don't want your opponent knowing that it's bothering you. A guy that's as tough and as smart and as crafty as Strickland to know the same thing that I just said, to continue to keep having to wipe it over and over and over, it seemed to me like it was bothering him.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with what you're saying.
But these things happen. They happen.
And that's my point. I'm not ripping on Sean, but like, you go out there, it's a contact sport. There's wrestling and stuff involved. Shit like that happens. Didn't say anything on the night. And then on Monday morning, he's probably a bit annoyed by it. He probably sees that video and that kind of, you know, ignites a bit of passion inside him and he's pissed off. And I understand that. But, you know, it happens a lot. Like when I fought Rockhold the first time, he headbutted me, boom. And I've only got one eye. I got one eye, not even two eyes, you know, and you just got to, it's a shitty situation. You know what I mean?
But then the cut that I got in my last fight started with a headbutt. It got opened up with punches as we went on. But like, I don't even know that I've even said that until like right now.
Yeah,
but it started with a headbutt. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's the point, what I'm saying. Listen, you go in there, you throw in everything, but the kitchen sink, sometimes heads clash. And I thought it was a right hand from Drickis, one of his best shots that opened that. That does look like it was that, but on the night, I remember thinking it was an overhand right. But let's have another look. Let's have a closer look here.
Yeah, the right hand right there.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Anyway, whatever, Brian. It's all good, mate. It's all good. Look, listen, at the end of the day, well done. Listen, Sean, I thought when he walked out there, I thought he looked really, really nervous, right? Because the difference is, you know, Sean always in the past, you know, he's kind of always been very honest with his feelings and feels like he doesn't even belong in this situation. And I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with that. But when you become the champion, like going down there to Australia and fighting Sean, Israel Adesanya, there's no pressure on you. It's just another payday. You're going down there, you get a chance to shot at the world, you get paid a shit ton of money for doing it, and you never know. You might come out the other side, the champion of the goddamn world. It's a great situation. But the situation completely changes when you're going somewhere to another country and you're on the plane and then Drickis du Plessis there and he's beating 20 people, 19 stoppages, and you're like, shit, this guy can take it all away. The pressure is unbelievable. Like when I fought Rockhold, I didn't give a fuck. I was like, let's go out there and swing, baby. Let's see what happens. But then, as I say, it changes. All of a sudden, you got fame, you got fortune, you become champion of the world, and you want to hang on to that. But it certainly looks like it wasn't nerves. He was just super, super, super dialed in. And he should be proud of himself, right? Everyone else in the UFC got smoked by the guy, got finished. Sean made it a very, very competitive fight. What do you think's next?
Man, I don't know. I probably the Izzy fight. I would imagine Izzy versus du Plessis. What's next for Strickland? I don't know. I think a Khamzat Chimaev fight would be pretty cool.
Why would you do that? Why would you say, right, we're going to throw you in against Drickis, we're going to take your title off you, it's going to be a razor close fight, you're going to get headbutted, you're going to get on the wrong end of a decision according to Anthony Smith and other people online, and then we're going to throw you in against Khamzat Chimaev. I'm not saying he can't beat him, by the way, but, you know, just to give you another really tough matchup.
Because Dana already said that the rematch is probably not likely going to happen, right? I don't think it's controversial. There's people on both sides of it, but no one's screaming for it, apparently. So if you want to control your own destiny, if you're Sean Strickland, okay, I'll give me the boogeyman, and then you don't have a choice. Like, you go out there and you beat Khamzat Chimaev, you're going to fight for the title next. It doesn't matter who you are. You get a debuter in the UFC right now. Debut guy takes a random fight. For some reason, they just want to give him Khamzat Chimaev. He wins that fight. He fights for the title. Like, it doesn't, like, you control your own destiny.
I got a devil's avocado for you, babe. Can you just turn that light to me? Just turn it up.
I'm saying the opposite.
So slightly.
I'm saying the opposite of what I would tell lots of people. Are you red?
There we go. I've got a little bit more light on me. No, that's better, babe. That's better. Thank you very much. What do you mean you're saying the opposite?
Because typically, remember I talk about the home run mentality. You got to get back. You got to take your time. You got to rebuild. You got to work your way back up.
Yeah.
But, man, I just feel like for a guy like Sean Strickland, that maybe sometimes that rule doesn't apply.
Allow me to present to you on a silver platter a devil's avocado. You just called room service. You went down. I said, yeah, don't worry, buddy. We're sending it up direct, prompt, boom, ding dong. That's the door. guy walks in, gets awkward in the room, gets super fucking awkward, doesn't it? When the room service guy, all woman comes like in, and you've like just got out of the shower, and you're like, "Oh right, just fucking leave it and get out and just bill me." Tip? No tip. Have you put the tip on? Because these bastard hotels, they'll get you with the tip.
They will.
I know the tip's already on, but then I end up tipping again because I don't read it.
They just stand there. They're like, "Yeah, God damn it."
Here's the devil's avocado that you just ordered.
Okay.
Sean Strickland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no. First of all, Drickus goes and fights Izzy.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be gangster if that happens at UFC 300.
That would be.
Or International Fight Week, because apparently Conor is not fighting in either of those. We'll get to that in a bit. Did you see what Dana said about that?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
It was not exciting.
So we'll do Drickus, Israel Adesanya, and one of those events. Okay. In the meantime, Sean Strickland rematches Jared Cannonier, because Jared Cannonier is the only one realistically right now with another claim at the belt. So you have Sean, allow him to get a chance to right the wrongs, right? I know you thought that Strickland won that. It was a really close fight. Mm-hmm. It was just like the Drickus fight, super razor close. So it gives him an ability to go out there, right that wrong, get a win, beat one of the top contenders, eradicate that loss, make some improvements to his style, and then fight again the winner of Drickus or Izzy, whoever that is, because he's got history with both. I mean, Mick Maynard, watch your back, bro, because I'm coming for your job.
But then what? Okay, what if you're Sean Strickland though, and all that happens?
You're sending the avocado back.
I'm sending it back real quick. Hold on.
This avocado shit.
What happens if, just say that Duplessis, say he loses to Izzy, and Sean is in this dust up with Cannonier, and in the meantime, then Khamzat comes back and they slide Khamzat right in with Izzy.
Well, imagine this. You step outside, you cross the street, and you get hit by a fucking car.
Yeah.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Right? You know what I mean? There's a million different ways you can slice life. You can say, "Now, hold on, what about this?" No. And also, another, because Khamzat, let's be honest, if you're going to fight Sean versus Khamzat, or Drickus is going to fight him, or whatever it is, Khamzat's a big draw, man. He does big numbers. He does, right? People, if you don't
realize, you probably want to be champion when you fight him.
You want to fight that guy when you're champ, because you're going to get big time. Anytime I do a video on Khamzat on my YouTube, boom, numbers. Do you know what I mean? People like hearing about boars. But let's throw it to the panel. Brian Harrington, welcome to the show. What do you think? Who did you guys have winning Saturday night?
I thought they were going to give it to Sean at the end of the fight, to be honest, because it was super close. And, you know, you got to beat the champ.
Fair enough. I had rounds 2, 3, and 4 for Drickus. I looked at the stats. Round 2 is the only round where Drickus landed more strikes than Sean Strickland. 3 and 4 were super razor close, but 4 is the one where that damage was caused, where the eyes started leaking. So, 3 was an absolute coin flip, but I had it going to Drickus. I think that's the one that made it a split decision too. Like the one judge who had it for Strickland gave that third round to him.
Can I just address this, and you'll know what I mean by this, Anthony, because you're absolutely right in what you said, Brian, this expression, you've got to beat the champ to take the belt from them. It's a term that gets used a lot, and you're absolutely right, right? And it's like, what as fans we want to see, if it's razor close, the champ should get to keep it. But that's not how it's just not. Right, the 10-point must system, the scores, the scoring criteria is still exactly the same. They do not modify it for a title fight. So whilst that is an expression that does get used, and I understand the reasoning behind that, when it's all said and done, and the way they come to a conclusion, it is not factored in.
No.
Yeah, I get it, but it feels like it is sometimes.
Well, it's not. I mean, it shouldn't be.
You know, and Dana even said that in the post-fight press conference. Like, he used that exact same term. Like, I thought Strickland won, and I'm one of these guys who believe that you got to really take it from the champ. I don't know that I believe that so much, if I'm being honest. You hear it all the time, and I get the idea of it. But, like, if you're a contender, like, fuck that. I just need to be – I don't – if I'm 0.2 seconds ahead of him, that's enough for me to get a win.
It's certainly a casual's take. I understand that.
Whoa,
for sure.
Whoa, whoa. You calling Dana White a casual?
No, not really. No, but he's from boxing. Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, no, but in boxing, it's
Dana,
like.
Dana, do you even know what MMA is?
That's not what I mean.
I know. I'm joking.
I do believe, though, that like sometimes if you get to a round that's just so close that you can't really, like, I don't know who won that round. The striking was close. The damage was close. The output is close. There was no takedowns. There was no takedown attempts. You got one guy that's the champion of the world and one guy that's not. Like, I don't really have too much of an issue with being like, well, if it's coin flip, and give it to the champ.
Yeah. No, listen, I have no problem with that. And if that was written down and implemented, I wouldn't have an issue. Mm-mm. But you got to go with what is implemented, Harrington. Right. You've been itching to say something, I can tell.
No, not at all.
Nothing. I got a question. Harrington, I have a question.
What's up?
It has nothing to do with what we were talking about, though. Is that okay?
Good. Good. I like this already.
Every show we do, you were in a different room in your house. So I don't understand. Like, sometimes you're like in the living room and you can see Alex walking back and forth randomly. And like, sometimes you're like in the kitchen. And now it looks to me like you're in the baby's room, but this is not the same place you were in when we first started, because before I could see clothes in the closet behind you, and now I can't see them. So you've even moved since we've been recording. So going on here? Why do we move around so much?
Well, last week
He's very proud because he used to be homeless, and now he has so many rooms. It's like, bro, today we're coming from the laundry.
Dude, last episode, actually, people were commenting that Alex was feeding the baby too fast. So I was like, let me remove all those distractions. If I'm recording at home, let me go to a room where I know no one's going to be walking behind me. The exterminator's not going to come in halfway through. So that's the,
That one. That is the answer to that one. And that is the end of that one. All right. Today's episode is brought to you by 8Sleep, the high-tech solution to your age-old sleeping issues. 8Sleep's pod cover slips right over your mattress, bringing heating and cooling tech that keeps you comfortable and sleeping deeper for a better, more restful night's sleep. Listen, this thing's fantastic. We love this product in our house. You've heard me raving on about it every single time I do this ad read, and you will love it as well. You want to be cool in bed. Well, I do, but technically, scientifically, that's how you get a better night's sleep. But not everybody wants that. Certainly the women, certainly from my experience, women want it warm. Simple as that. Well, now you're ever going to have an argument. You're not wrestling over the air conditioning or anything like that, because one side of the bed can go as hot as 110 degrees if you're a maniac, and the other side of the bed can go as low as 55 degrees, okay? So you'll both be happy and you'll both get the night's sleep that you want. Sleep science has showed that in order to sleep your best, the body temperature needs to drop, Rebecca, and then it has to rise in the morning. By the way, in addition to keeping you at the perfect temperature all night, the pod will track your sleep and your health metrics. Pod users, on average, say that they saw their sleep quality improve by 32% after just a month on the pod. As I said, this thing's fantastic. It just slips right onto your mattress like a mattress cover, right? The technology is fantastic, and you will sleep like an absolute baby. Check this thing out. I'm going to give you $200 off as well. There is no better way to improve your day-to-day life than with better sleep, and the easiest way to do that is with the 8Sleep Pod 3. Start the new year right. Invest in the rest that you deserve with 8Sleep's pod cover. So go to 8sleep.com/Bisping to get $200 off. One more time, 8Sleep, spell out 8sleep.com/Bisping, $200 off. Now, to jump back on, we'll have a little non-MMA discussion before we get back into everything else. Anthony, you tell me, do you want to hear about a Brazilian medical student that went out partying and was shot in the head and didn't even realize it?
Yes.
You want to hear, we're not talking about Sports Illustrated. Do you want to hear about a Florida anger management specialist that you pick it.
Give me a guy that got shot in the head.
I can't read. Okay. I've asked Rebecca for my contact lenses. Everything's blurry as fuck. go ahead, Harrington.
It's a 21-year-old Brazilian medical student. He was out like on holiday with his buddies. They were out at the beach having a good time, and he felt something. He assumed that he had been hit in the head by a rock. Somebody was pulling some kind of like sick prank. And yeah, that was that. So he went back to his hotel room. You know, he had a doctor with him, like who you know, helped like dress the wound or whatever. He went back to his hotel room, showered, kept on partying for the next like 3 days. End of the vacation, as he's heading home, he starts feeling like, you know, his arm is like spazzing out like crazy. So he's like, all right, I gotta go to hospital, see what this whole thing's about. They bring him in, they take a look. It turns out that was not a rock he got hit in the head with. He got shot in the head and a bullet was lodged in his brain for days while he was out drinking and having a good old time. Yeah, docs were able to take it out, and he's going to make a full recovery.
He's going to make a full recovery. Nicely laid out there, Harrington. I just want to say this, though. See the point I made earlier? All damage is not visible. This guy didn't realize he had any damage. He's been shot in the head. Do you know what I mean? The judges need to take that stuff into consideration.
I have an odd take on this.
Oh, have you also been shot in the head and not realized it?
No, but I kind of get it. I could see how that's possible. Like, if it's a smaller caliber bullet and you're pretty drunk... And you're pretty drunk and it goes into a place that doesn't immediately like, you know, discombobulate you or paralyze you or you're unconscious. Like, it might feel like you just got hit in the head. Like, I don't know if you're pretty drunk. I've been to some wild parties before when I was young. I was partying. I'm like 3-4 day benders. Oh. Like, I get it. Like, I'm not checking my head. Fuck it. We're going to keep on partying. Figure it out later.
I know all about the 3 day bender. Do you know, when I was younger, I was a nightmare. Okay. But I'm pretty sure I would have noticed if I got shot in the head. And I don't care what size gun, Mr. Smith, Brian.
Harrington said he went to a doctor to help clean it up, which I feel like that guy's license needs to be revoked. Because here's the image. Like, it's censored, obviously. But, like, you don't look a little deeper into that head wound? You know what I'm saying?
I wish we could see the uncensored one.
I could probably find it.
Well, maybe not put it on the show, but I'd love to see it.
I'll text it to you.
So I mean, it wasn't a doctor that he went to go see. It was a fellow medical student who was like a little bit further along in the course than he was. And that's the guy.
They're both medical students.
Yeah.
And it's like these guys are going to an 11-year-old and being like,
he's like, you're fine. You've just been shot in the head. Just put a bit of bloody, put a bit of cotton or something on it. Put a Band-Aid on it. Like, you'll be fine.
What, they're just getting it in the club? And he's like, what the hell? No one heard a gunshot?
Put a little Tussin on it.
Oh, speaking of gunshots,
go ahead.
I'm all over the place today, Mike. I'm sorry. You're gonna have to keep me on track.
No. You're good, bro.
So Friday night, I went out, had dinner. I was hanging out with Tate a little bit, and my wife calls me, freaking out. Why? She called me. I missed it. She calls back again. I miss it. And I look at my phone. I got like 2 missed calls, and she's calling. So I'm like, oh shit. So I go outside where I can hear her, and she said, "I checked the cameras. I think there's gunshots going off here at the house." She thought someone was like outside shooting.
No shit.
Temperatures are like really cold and freezing, right? So then I listen to the cameras. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, that's definitely a gunshot. So then she starts checking the rest of the cameras. Turns out they were sodas exploding inside the... We have a beer fridge with like drinks and sodas and beer in the garage. It was so cold that the drinks were exploding inside of the refrigerator and just fucking... I mean, these... cans are like shredded. They look like grenades were going off. It was insane. That just made me think of that.
And let's be honest, it's not like you haven't got history of this stuff happening at your house,
right?
PTSD kicking in, you know what I mean? Even though you could get shot in the head and not give a damn and still carry on partying,
right?
Yeah. Well, glad to hear that no one was there. No gunshots going on.
No, I'm just taking this thing all over the place, Mike.
No, please. Well, that's what we're meant to do. Do we really want to sit here and study the in-depth analysis of this guy's? I tell you what, though, to be fair, that is the best excuse for having a headache the next day. I always wake up, I'm like, oh, God, oh, man, I've got a terrible headache. I'm hungover. I feel like I've been shot in the head. Turns out this guy's actually been shot in the head.
Does it make you wish, like, you know, we go work these events and you come back and you got a little bit of a hangover, a headache, and your wife's like, maybe we weren't out drinking all night. I wish I had a bullet in my head. She would never say shit to me ever again. Oh, yeah? Well, I got fucking shot last night. Like, that'd be great.
Oh, 100%, because you feel totally vindicated. Because like when I was when I was out doing a film Red Sonja comes out this year. Keep an eye out for that one. My back was killing, and I've talked about it. I'm on my back sore, and in between takes, they had to bring me a chair to sit on, and everyone was making fun out of me. They actually wrote on the chair. They called it the Diva chair because just standing was so painful. It really was. Doing anything, action scenes, whatever, I was fine, but actually just standing still was so painful. But everyone talked shit. Mm-hmm. And then I got back and they got the imaging done. I had a broken back in two places. It's the same thing. I was so happy to send a copy of the X-ray and go, fuck you, dickheads. Mm-hmm. Diva chair. Kiss my ass. I had a broken back.
Now I want all these apologies in writing.
Yes. Yes. All right. So, Harrington and Brian, real quick, jump on. Next fight, Dricus, and next fight for Strickland. Me and Anthony have a difference of opinion.
Oh man. I mean, the Khamzat Strickland fight, you made a great point. It's like you put him up against anybody, whoever, if you can beat him, you give them a shot. Otherwise Khamzat seems to be, you know, kind of in the running for the next shot.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's that feels like way too big of a jump for Khamzat, honestly. I know that the Usman fight was supposed to be number one contender, but how are you fighting the guy who just lost a razor-thin decision for the heavyweight title when the best middleweight that you've beaten is John Phillips, the GM3? You know, like that feels like too big of a step up in competition. I personally love the Cannoneer fight, and I do think Izzy has to be next for Dricus, right? The storyline is there. They had the face off, the showdown. They were supposed to fight already. Everything is lined up there. So that one's an absolute no brainer.
Excuse me, I'm just gonna take a call. What's that? You ordered another Devil's Avocado? We'll be back. I've got one more for you though. Have you seen this? Alex Pereira is saying one more dance at 185. Dricus du Plessis, Alex Pereira. Now, Anthony, let me ask you this. Dricus du Plessis, Alex Pereira, of course, great fight, right? Mm-hmm. It gives Pereira a chance to reclaim his 185-pound belt. It gives Dricus a chance to go up to 205 if he wins that, right, and become a two-weight division champion and all the rest of it. Not saying this is what he's doing, but it would also allow him to not yet fight Magomed Ankalaev.
that would solve that problem too.
I was thinking the opposite. Like, that is just such a good way to mess with Izzy's summer plans. And that feels like what Pereira's put on this planet to do is just ruin Israel out of sight.
I don't believe that. I think Pereira really likes Izzy. Like, even in his last, I got the correct translation of his conversation about
that.
Izzy after the fight, and it came off like I'm like being an asshole, like, but what he's trying to do is he's trying to give Israel the same opportunity that Israel gave him. Like, Izzy's in a down and out spot. He's just not in a great place in his career. He's having some tough times, so he's trying to give Israel an opportunity to build himself back up, like Izzy gave to him, essentially giving this resurgence of his career. So I don't think he wants to mess with Izzy.
No.
I think he's funny. I think he's funny and he likes joking around. I think he has a great sense of humor. And it comes off because he looks like a serial killer and he doesn't laugh a whole lot. Like, it'd be like every joke I told you guys, I just said it straight faced and looked angry. But
you do.
I think that's fair. I think he wants to help Izzy. I don't think he wants to do any harm for, like, of course they fight, but I don't think he wants bad things for Izzy.
And as you said, a good person. I mean, he was in Sean Strickland's corner at the weekend. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of people. They loved it. Every time they were looking at the corner in between rounds, you could just see Alex Pereira's head just popping up over the top of the fence. That was nice. That was a classy move by Alex Pereira there. So I don't think they'll do that. I think Pereira, Magomed Ankalaev, or Jamal Hill. Oh, Anthony, Jamal, any updates on that guy?
No, I haven't heard from him. No, he's kind of went dark, which means he's working. So that's good for him.
Yes, it does. All right, today's episode is sponsored by Chalk.com. That is CHOQ.com. What does Chalk do? Well, Chalk give you the best all-natural testosterone booster available on the market. Look, listen, you're probably feeling it. I am. Your testosterone's dipping. You're not getting the same results. You're not the same man. You haven't got the same drive to get up and go. You haven't got the same libido, and you want to replace it, but you don't want to turn into Vito Belfort. You don't want to treat your ass like a dartboard, sticking needles into it every 2 seconds. That is where Chalk comes in, okay? They specialize in all-natural testosterone, and Chalk has created the all-new natural testosterone booster that's taking the sports nutrition world by storm. And this thing is absolutely fantastic because you know exactly what you're putting in your body. Supplements that a lot of the time you can't trust what's on the label. The ingredients are not good ingredients. They're not measured properly. Well, Chalk uses full disclosure labeling, so you know exactly the amount of ingredients going into your body. There's no label fluffing, no underdosing, and all ingredients are measured to exact clinical research. Chalk Daily is the cleanest research-based testosterone booster on the market that actually works, that gives you the results that you are looking for. Improved strength, energy, drive, manliness, results from your workout, just feeling a little bit more invigorated about life, okay? And along with Chalk Daily, be sure to check out the Male Vitality Stack and the Stack Ultra. So what more are you waiting for? You're waiting for the code. I got you, baby. I got your discount as well. 35% off your entire order when you go to chalk.com, C-H-O-Q.com, and use the code Bisping when you're there for 35% off the entire order. Chalk.com, use promo code Bisping and be the better version of yourself this spring with Chalk. All right, should we get into that co-main event? Oh, the yeah. Champion has a name, and that is one Rocky Raquel Pennington. Myra Bueno Silva. How do you go into a 5-round main event and just be that tired after round 3? I'm not trying to be mean, you know, but you gotta have conditioning to go 5 rounds. You know, she didn't take it on short notice. She had a full camp, I believe, right? If I'm not mistaken. And just being that exhausted in round 3, at the end, she could hardly get off the ground. You know, don't get me wrong. Raquel was great. She punished her. The boxing was awesome. The coaches were screaming at Raquel, stop clinching, right? On the feet, you're busting her up. But every time she wouldn't control her feet, she would fall into the clinch, she would land some shots and then clinch again. Bueno Silva was trying to get that ninja choke because she choked out Holly Holm with it. And it's like when you connect with the right hand, ooh, that feels good and you fall in love with it. Every single time she was looking for the same choke. Would have been amazing if she got it again, but she did it. She got tired. Raquel took over. And there was no question when it came to the scorecards.
No, not at all. In both their corners were begging them to stay out of the clinch. Both of them wanted them. So I thought that was really, it was just interesting that they both wanted them to not fight in the clinch. And that their coaches kept saying that the clinch is benefiting the other person. That's what they want. But really, that person's coaches were saying no to. So I thought that was weird. It just looked like a lack of experience to me for Bueno Silva. She just, I don't know, she didn't pace herself well enough for 5 rounds. She didn't, she just didn't look like she was real polished and had a hard and fast game plan. She looked good in the first round. She was really attacking the leg. She took the back. I wonder.
She almost finished her a couple of times.
Yeah, I wonder if she just gassed herself, you know, trying to get the finish, thinking that she was closer, which is an inexperienced thing. That's a lack of experience and knowledge in those situations. And I think she'll learn from it. And she'll be better. John Anik had a really good point that one of those ladies is a finished product, essentially. Not saying that Raquel Pennington can't continue to get better and grow and add skills and stuff to her game, because we all can, no matter what point of our careers we're in. But essentially, like, we kind of know she is what she is. But Bueno Silva's got a lot of room to grow. So I don't think she's going anywhere. I think she'll continue to get better. I was really happy to see Pennington win a title, just as a veteran myself and guy that's been around a long time. And, you know, I know what it takes. I know the grind, the journey, it's a hard road, and she's had she's had some tough things happen with some injuries. And so it was just a feel good moment. You know, I'm happy for her.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go now. 10 years in the company, fighting a lot of greats on there. She's been in the ring with multiple champions, Holly Holm, Jermaine de Randamie. Who else? There was Amanda Nunes, of course. After 10 years sticking it out, at one point, I'm sure Dana said once, at one point she was his favorite fighter. you know. So yeah, it is nice. You know, she's 35 years old, coming towards the end of her athletic career. Yeah, beautiful to see. Question is, what's next? Because, of course, Juliana Pena, right? Mm-hmm. She should be next upon deck without question. But Amanda Nunes, the lioness, came out of the weekend and she feels like she might still have more to give. What are we saying? If you're the matchmaker, if you're Mick Maynard, if you're ordering Devil's Avocado from room service right now, what are you ordering? Are you ordering a Juliana Pena or are you ordering an Amanda Nunes?
I really thought Amanda Nunes drove 4 days from South Florida with two kids all the way to Canada to watch this fight. And I was like, you don't do that for no reason, you know? And I have this really
4 days.
Cool, 4 days. Took 4 days.
Why?
I don't know. Cause she got the money to fly. But
can't take babies on planes these days though. Yeah, right. You get sucked out the window.
Right. No, I have this real cool video on my phone of Bruce Buffer doing the announcements. And so on one side, I take the video and it's Raquel Pennington and it pans over to Bueno Silva. And then I look straight directly across the octagon and Amanda Nunes is in Dana's section, arms on the rail, leaning over, like looking. I don't know. She's like the mother, like overseeing the division, you know? And like, I just kept imagining like someone's going to win. It's going to be a awesome fight. And then she walks in the octagon and says, grabs that microphone from Daniel Cormier and says, I'll see you at UFC 300. That's like what I envisioned happening, but it didn't. But if it was up to me, I'd love to see Amanda Nunes come back.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And congratulations again to Raquel Pennington and Juliana Pena. Probably is going to be the next person, but you never know. She might throw a little curveball in there. The lioness, of course, I am talking about. Maya Malotte didn't get the job done. Went up against Neil Magny. Magny getting it done for the veterans, for the older boys. Yep. He needed that one as well to stay relevant in the organization. That sounds like a harsh summary, but, you know, he's been losing a few. The Ian Garry fight wasn't too great. Oh, real quick. Ian Garry, you see the shit he was talking to Sean Strickland?
Oh, yeah.
Did we have that video, Brian? Can we play that? Because it is, I'm sorry, I know that I just had a major ADD moment there, but he is talking shit about Strickland. And listen, all's fair in love and war, right? You live by the sword, you die by the sword. What did you make of those comments, though?
Am I the only one that thought that that's not the first time he watched that fight? You mean to tell me that this fight happened and you didn't watch it? And come on. You just are shirt off the next day, only watching the highlights. Like, I don't know. And you didn't know who the winner. You live in this space that we live in. You didn't scroll Instagram or Twitter for 13 seconds at any point in time from then to then and didn't know who won the fight. I don't know.
Highlights of the Sean Strickland and Du Plessis fight. I hope Sean gets sparked and conscious. There is no way I ever would have bet against Du Plessis losing this fight, considering he mauled Robert Whittaker. And Sean Strickland isn't half the fighter Robert Whittaker is. Just sloppy boxing. Look, swinging. Look at this. The fucking state of this. Zero technique, just slugging it out now. Oh my God, I feel like I'm watching two amateurs fight. Oh my God. Oh my dear Jesus Christ. If I ever have a fight like that, please tell me to retire.
He's a super confident guy. He's a pretty accomplished striker himself. So at times, I'm sure it does look sloppy. Both those guys have really awkward, different looking styles. They just don't. You know, they don't look like normal striking exchanges because they're both very different types of fighters. They're not your typical 1-2 slip the cross. Like that's not their game. I don't know that anybody with any kind of analysis in their game would pick him to beat either one of those guys though. But, you know, I get it. I understand it. I understand his mentality.
So, look, listen, he's right to a certain degree. That clip there that he watched and the last 30 seconds of that fight, yeah, it was sloppy stuff.
Yeah, they've been doing this shit for 25 minutes.
Exactly. They're trying to get the win. They're trying to dig deep. They're trying to give those glasses, Bev. They're trying to just get the final little morsels out of their system. They haven't got much left to give. They're utterly destroyed. They just want to fall over on the ground. They're trying their best, and they're swinging, and it's sloppy, and it's horrible. It is, and it's not technical. The gift of vision is back. But they're exhausted. I was just looking up when you were talking, thinking, has Ian Garry ever gone five rounds? He has, in Cage Warriors against Jack Grant. But it is a little different going five rounds in Cage Warriors as to what it is in a championship fight in the UFC. But hey, listen, fair play to him. He's got every right in the world to talk all the shit that he wants. Neil Magny, Mike Malott, real quick, 30 seconds, go.
Yeah, when he got into the octagon, the last couple fights, Neil hasn't looked super present. I know he's had a lot going on in his personal life, which probably is affecting him. But he had a different look. He gave me like a we met eyes, and I kind of gave him a nod, and he just looked very present in the moment. Mike Malott looked a little bit small, if I'm being honest. I was surprised at how small he was for the weight class once he was in there next to Neil. But Neil was losing. He was getting beat to the punch. His legs were battered. He was having a tough time. Mike Malott looked like a young kid that just got a little bit in over his head, got a little bit tired, and let a guy like Neil Magny back in. If you don't shut the door on Neil Magny, he'll shut it himself.
And that's why you got to finish fights, right? 100%. Because certainly with somebody like Neil Magny, right? And of course, you don't want to let it go to the judges' scorecards. And no fighter's ever doing that. I remember when Jaltan Almeida defeated Derek Lewis. He took him down. Every round, smothered him, led on top of him in mount, but wasn't really trying to finish the fight. And me and Dominic Cruz were having a difference of opinion. You know, I was like, he needs to try and finish this fight. And I was like, well, he's controlling, he's winning, he's doing everything he is. He's clearly winning the fight. But that just shows right there. And certainly when you go talking about someone like Derek Lewis, I'm not trying to bring up an old fight, but it's a good example. Right. Derek Lewis is the knockout king in the UFC. Every time the fight starts or a round starts, he's back on the feet and you can smother him. That's why if you get an opportunity to finish somebody, you've got to do it, because Neil Magny, there's no quitting that guy. Gets the job done, gets the takedown against the fence, takes him out, boom, boom, boom. Beautiful moment. That will be a learning experience for Mike Malott. He's a great fighter. That was a big platform for him. I'm sure the pressure got to him. He's the only Canadian on the main card. You know, he's being hyped. He's 10-1. They're all finishes. You know, he's not a young guy. He's 32, so he's not a baby. But still, he's a baby in terms of those big fight feels.
He's inexperienced there. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, he's inexperienced there. I think he'll be just fine. To him, it feels like the end of the world right now. I think those of us in the know are like, yeah, he'll figure that out. We probably won't see that happen again.
Yeah. Herringbone.
Yes, sir.
Requesting your presence. Dana was talking to, I'm talking about number 7 here, Sportsnet Canada. And what was he saying about the big boys?
So he was saying that John Jones' recovery is going well. And he said Jones, Stipe, Summer is what it's looking like. He also said that Tom Aspinall will likely defend his belt before then, because Aspinall wants to establish that he is, in fact, the best heavyweight on the planet, regardless of what those two are doing.
Hold on. Someone's ordering a third devil avocado.
Okay.
Alex Pereira goes up to heavyweight. So Jones and Stipe going down in summer. I don't know why. For some reason, I thought that would be delayed longer, just simply because of how bad the injury was. But that's nice to see. That'll go down. If you're matchmaking Tom Aspinall, who are you putting him in there with? And do you think that'll be UFC 300 or International Fight Week? Or do we all need to just stop talking about those two fight cards now?
Yeah, I don't know when. Man, who's the heavyweights that are up there right now? Curtis Blaydes, he doesn't have a fight coming up, correct?
Cyril Gane
is a possible. Cyril Gane does not want to fight. Well, I guess he does now. The longest time, he didn't want to fight Big Tom. But yeah, I could see Cyril Gane. I could see, but
Blaydes does have a fight. It's against Jaltan Almeida at UFC 299.
Man, the winner maybe.
Winner of that or Cyril Gane Harrington. What was Dana White saying? Because he was asked about Conor McGregor saying fighting International Fight Week. And what was he saying, Harrington? Because he basically said they're not announcing that yet.
Yeah, so it was a two-parter, right? So he said during that Sportsnet Canada interview that Conor was going to come back at some point this year, and that it was possibly going to be against Michael Chandler, depending on how all that shakes out. They then asked him to clarify at the post-fight presser whether or not it was going to be Chandler, and if it was going to be that June date that McGregor had said. Dana said, you know, no, it's not. And he said, you know, when McGregor is ready to fight, we will make an official announcement because that's how we do business.
Well, that's disappointing.
For Chandler.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was meaning.
Is it
how
a
long surprise? How long do you wait?
Why do you? Do you think, because listen, Dana Lassie holds things close to his chest, right? And you want to make an announcement, and maybe McGregor shouldn't have said anything there. Who knows? Maybe his training isn't going as well as what he thought. Maybe there could be a million bloody different reasons. Maybe he's just not in the gym yet and needs more time. I still don't think if you Chandler, you let it go. I still don't. Yet.
Yeah, not yet.
But at some point, you have to walk away.
You do. But if it's not Chandler, just say that he does let it go. And then Conor all of a sudden wants to come back. Who would they fight? Who would Conor fight?
Justin Gaethje.
I don't know.
Masvidal.
I would love that. But what if he? I just don't like Chandler is the guy right now, but everyone else. Of course, they want to come back in, and you know everyone would love to fight a Conor McGregor. But like a lot of the other people that are big names are in big situations right now. You got Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje. You got, Islam's the champion, but Conor's going to need a win. Guys like the Sarukians and Beniels, and I don't think they're big enough names to draw Conor in. Like Chandler might have Conor by the balls a little bit.
How so?
Because I think Conor needs Chandler as bad as Chandler wants Conor.
Because Chandler is hittable. He's kind of like the perfect opponent.
I think he's the perfect opponent with a big enough name value that's available right now.
Big enough name value and where it's a risk. The risk reward is good enough. Because Conor doesn't want to come back and get beaten. Yeah. I hope it does go down. I hope it does, because I was looking forward to it. Listen, McGregor brings it. He does. He brings excitement, big fight feels. You know what I mean? Vegas goes crazy. And it makes the sport an exciting place. And I did think this recently. I haven't seen McGregor on Twitter as much. And I thought that's because he must be in the gym. He's not enjoying himself. Listen, if you're not training for a fight, God judge the man. He's enjoying himself. I'd be on the Lamborghini yacht. Smashed out my face doing voice notes to everyone. You know what I mean? I would. But he's not fighting. He's not, but now I thought he was training. Anyway, Anthony, you're a father. You love your children.
Yeah.
I'm a father. I care for my children. no, I'm joking, obviously. California now are bringing in an incentive. I don't know if this has been passed, Harrington, or not, but they're basically going to bribe students to do well at school. There's going to be a monetary incentive to get better grades, to have better attendance and all the rest of it. Now, I don't know the details of it, and Harrington can shed some more light. I was just at the gym before and I was on the treadmill and it was on and there was the closed captioning on, the subtitles. So I was just reading along with it. So I said to Harrington, just look this up. But my initial thought, and I haven't looked into it yet, is that for crying out loud, governments should not be having to step in to do the job that a parent should do. Do you know what I'm saying? They should not be having to bribe them. Harrington, what are the details of? Because I am kind of blind going into this one.
So the idea is it's mostly to help lower income families and lower income children. So if you do qualify for being from a lower income household, you can get up to $500 per year. You just go to this thing. Any student in the state of California can do this. You sign up, you go to this thing. Depending on what your parents' economic status is, you could be eligible for up to $1,500. If you are homeless and still attending school, if you're in foster care and still attending school.
If you're homeless and attending school, I mean, get out the rain. I'd be going to school every goddamn day.
Right, right.
Yeah, there's free carry lunch. On, yeah, so that's the idea, is that essentially, like, if you sign up for this program starting from kindergarten, right, and you keep clocking that in, you should have enough in this account by the time you graduate high school to be able to afford in-state tuition, you know, at pretty much any university. So that's the kind of thinking there, is like, you know, we're going to incentivize you to not only go to school and graduate, but, you know, once you have graduated, you can, in theory, debt-free, get yourself a college education and, you know, maybe, you know, it raise your standard of living.
Government subsidy of college is the reason why the price is out of control. The more people the government pays to go to college, the more expensive it is for regular people to go to college who can pay their own way.
Oh, so you just...
Is that factual, Brian?
What's that?
Is that factual?
Yes.
I mean, you just have to look at the rate of, like, student loans from the government going up and tuition prices going up since the 70s.
There's a direct correlation over the past, whatever, 40, 50 years.
I mean, it sounds to me like you don't want lower income kids to really bust their ass to go to school and get paid and then go get college degrees. That's what I heard.
That is
I'm
correct.
All for. I'm 100% for lower income families getting as much help as they need, certainly from the wealthiest government on planet Earth. Right. Mm-hmm. Because UK governments give way too much and our economy is nowhere near the size of the UK. However, I do feel like, I don't know, that's the parent's job. It's like, it's soft parenting. Like, how the fuck? I mean, don't get me wrong. It's great. It's good. But shouldn't the parents be making sure the kids do well at school? Shouldn't the parents be make sure that they attend every single day? Do you know what I mean? That's just... I don't know. There's something in there that I don't like, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
I think I'm with you, but I think we're looking at it from the position in life that we're in right now. If you or any of your friends or me or whoever, like if you seen that happening in our situation, I'd have a big problem with it. But sometimes you go to these lower income families, these inner city places, these... kids that maybe don't have those kind of influences in their life, the kind of opportunities that maybe we can afford to our family and the people that we hang out with. So that part of it doesn't make me feel so bad about it, actually. Like, you know, you got a single working mother with a couple kids and she's doing the best that she can. And, you know, she got this kid that's doing well in school. He's going to graduate. He's going every single year and passing all his classes. Like, I don't have any problem with kind of giving them a little bit of an opportunity because it doesn't sound like they're going to be able to use that money for anything that goes into an account and they can use it for college.
I have no issue with that, but they could just dress it up a better way. Do you know what I'm saying? Because apparently Hamilton never said this part, that regardless of your financial situation, some people are going to get paid as well. Again, I've got nothing against people getting a little bit of spending money. And I'm sure as a kid, that money's going to come in great. But as I say, I just feel like it's taking the responsibility of the parents to step up and be good fucking parents, because that's the problem right now. And I know I sound like an old man ranting, but the younger generation have no goddamn respect. Do you know what I mean? You see the amount of crimes and these flash mobs and running into stores and shit like this. And now they're going to get, if you go to school, we'll pay you. When I was younger, if I didn't go to school, I got a clip around the fucking ear. I got my dad's belt whipping me. Yeah, I got the garden cane.
The
I got
cops the used to drive out. Around and pick us up when we would cut school.
Yeah.
But now you're going to get paid to make sure you go.
Lucas actually is eligible.
Is he?
Yeah, you can get $175 a year.
Brian just edited that bit out. No, but that's it is. It's bullshit, man. It's bullshit. I really think it is. But Brian, I would love to know your take on it a little bit further, because you do not like governmental decisions.
No. Well, government money has really made universities expand beyond what they could pay for. So now tuition has to go higher and higher. So it really is like it's a weird situation, because it's like not everybody needs a college degree. We do need tradesmen and all this other shit. And now with the government subsidizing college degrees. Everybody's just going for not necessarily infrastructure jobs, as you can see with our airplanes and our bridges falling apart and our roads are all fucked up. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of people are staying away from that, and that's not necessarily good for society either. I don't necessarily think everybody needs to go to college and get a degree to go make something of themselves.
Everybody doesn't need to go to college. And remember, we kind of had a disagreement, you know, Jamal Hill and I had a difference of opinion. And I wasn't saying everyone needs to go to college. College isn't for everybody. But a certain amount of people that want to go off and do a certain type of thing, you got to get a college education. But I just think that as you say, you know, it just creates this.
And now you have all these
system,
people,
this cycle that just gets worse and worse.
And you have all these people with useless degrees that that are now hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt.
Gender studies.
For example,
art.
You know, I mean, how many people with art majors are going to go run the Louvre? You know, one, you know, right. Like what are you competing for? You're competing for jobs that don't exist. A lot of people are, they're going into these industries for nothing. And then they end up flipping burgers in and out.
A lot of young girls go there and do psychology.
Yeah. And then they're on OnlyFans.
Yeah. Well, not even that. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, what are you doing? Well, why are you studying psychology? I know you. You're not going to become a psychologist. You're just not. You need a psychologist. You need a psychiatrist. What the fuck are you going to talk about?
I like a good In-N-Out burger, though, so we need them too.
And that's a solid career path. I think that's 150K if you're a manager these days or something like that.
That's a good living.
That's a very good living.
Well, maybe not in Colorado or California.
Oh, bro, it's not. Anyway, let's talk about something we do know about. Harrington, news. What have we got? Anything in your life? Any fire rumors, Anthony? Anything like that? Is that not even being looked at yet?
No, I'm looking for something exciting. I want something exciting. I don't want to rush into something. So I haven't heard anything. I ran into Mick Friday and Saturday. I seen him at the fight. So, and he didn't bring it up and I didn't bring it up. We just talked about life, jiu-jitsu a little bit. But I want something exciting. Something that not even scary. Like just some, ooh, that'd be fun. Like that, I kind of want that reaction. Like that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard it here, guys. Anthony Smith versus Conor McGregor, UFC 300.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That would be fun. All right, today's episode is sponsored by FitBod. Look, listen, be honest. The New Year's resolutions, it's out the window already. You probably haven't been to the gym. You're cheating on your diet. You're having a little drink. Well, it doesn't matter. FitBod are here to save the day because sometimes you can't get to the gym. Sometimes you're too busy. Maybe you can't afford it. Certainly can't afford the cost of a personal trainer. Well, guess what? For the cost of one session with a personal trainer, FitBod will give you access to an entire year's worth of personalized programs, workout, exercises. You get to see everything on there. FitBod Smart Workout app will create a custom dynamic workout program based on your goals, your experience, and as I said, the equipment that you have at your availability. The algorithm uses data and analytics to scientifically build your best next workout. You can see all your results right there in the app, muscle usage, recovery, achievements. You're in control. You can change the workout. You can put in the equipment that you have. You're at the gym. You're in the garage. You're at the park. You're at the bench. You're on a plane. Who knows? And as I said, the best thing is for less than the cost of one session with a personal trainer, you get a full year's access to FitBod. And by the way, over 1,400 high definition videos to teach you exactly how to do the exercises so you don't injure yourself and you're using the correct form. FitBod works on iOS and Android devices. The app is super easy to use with the video tutorials as well. Makes learning the exercises an absolute breeze. And this is the best part. Get personalized workouts from FitBod right now. Get 25% off, or you can try the app out for free when you sign up at fitbod.me/believe. That's 25% off the subscription, or you can try it out for free at fitbod.me/believe. What are you doing this week? There's no fights on this weekend. Once again, I'm going to attempt again. I'm taking Lucas fishing, right? He had a little spell where he loved fishing. So we would go fishing and we never caught anything other than if we went on a boat. down at the beach, and they do everything for you. We're not fucking fishing. They hand you a rod, you know, and you do that, and then a fish gets on the end of it. Yeah, technically that's fishing, but they do everything for you, and they're probably chumming the water and stuff. Do you know what I mean? And you're out in the fucking ocean, there's fish galore. But never once going down to a river or a lake have we ever caught anything. Saturday, we're going up to Lake Gregory in the San Bernardino Mountains. This is the plan. We're going to take a picnic. We're going to take some snacks and shit like that. And we are going to catch some fish, hopefully.
That'd be fun. That'd be fun. I love fishing. It's too cold to be doing any fishing here. I don't really have any plans. We got a basketball tournament Friday and Saturday, like during the day. But then I think Sunday I might go hunting. So I'll probably go do some hunting. I haven't been able to get out as much as I typically like to. So probably do that. Got to fill the freezer. So I'm looking for a deer that's got some jerky with him. That'd be nice.
Regarding the weather, it's 76 degrees here on Saturday. So I'm like, that's a beautiful day. So that's why we're going to go fishing. But I was going to ask you, what are you hunting? You're hunting deer?
Deer, yeah.
With a gun?
Yes.
How close do you get to the deer?
I'll drop anything inside of 250 yards.
Then how long do you think it'll take you to catch a deer?
I don't know. That's the fun part. You just hang out and just look around. Honestly, I know that hunters are always looked at like, you know, crazy people by a lot of folks, but the worst part of hunting is after you take the shot. I actually have a lot of fun getting up early in the morning and the anticipation and the sneaking into my blind and or wherever I'm at. And then just sitting and watching the sun come up and you watch all the animals go by and all the deer that you decide, like you pass on the smaller ones. So you're watching them out there frolicking, doing their thing. Mm. All the work happens after you shoot it. That's the worst part. And then you got to go and you got to do all the work and get it out and drag it and field dress it and all that stuff. But so I don't take a lot of shots, to be honest with you. I pass on a lot of deer.
That sounds beautiful, though, what you just described, getting up early in the morning, going out there, experiencing nature. I mean, that sounds amazing. It really does. You just got to end with a bit of cold, extreme violence. You're going to shoot one in the head. Maybe the deer will go party for 2 days afterwards, and then it will fall down dead.
Yeah, but I don't shoot a lot of – I know people that, you know, like families, they'll shoot 6-7 deer a year. There's a lot of times where I won't shoot at all. It's got to mean something, you know?
Do you wear a deer stalker hat?
A deer stalker hat? What's that?
Yeah. Sherlock Holmes, bro. You don't know. You're one of those hats. They call them a deer stalker hat. You don't wear a deer stalker?
No.
You don't stalk those deers?
No. No, I just wait.
How quiet do you have to be? Because I think this would be my problem. I'm too impatient.
Before, I used to hunt like in tree stands. So you have to be super quiet because you're up high above them and there's nothing around you to muffle the sound. But I don't hunt in tree. I don't hunt out of tree stands anymore for the most part. Largely because I have a trailer blind that's heated with windows. So now I'm in close. So I don't have to be. A lot of times I just sit in there, I text in with my wife, I'm watching the deer, hanging out, take lots of pictures. So I'm just hanging out.
Anthony, your little nature, you're a bird spotter. You're out there, you're masking as a hunter, but realistically you're enjoying the fragrant scent of the wildflowers.
Yeah, I'm just happy to be there. I'll have to send you some of the pictures I took from the last time. I don't know if you're into nature pictures, but it's...
Oh, of course. When we do the ice bath, when it was sunny, that's our favorite bit. We warm up, we recharge with the power of the sun, the vitamin D, we look at the birds. We do. We love it. It's great. Awesome. We've gone very California. Frank Yeager was inducted into the Hall of Fame Saturday night. I mean, come on, the man deserves it. There's not much of a conversation there. I'm sure DC even agrees with that. What was the reaction? What was the reaction from the crowd?
They were happy. They were happy, and Frankie was shocked at it. I thought he knew, but apparently he didn't have any idea.
I don't know.
So it was cool. Everyone stood up. The entire arena gave him a standing ovation. I thought that was super cool. He's got so many highlights. You could have done a 30-minute Hall of Fame induction package with that. It was really, really cool. It was a feel-good moment. And it, I don't, if Frankie Edgar can't get in, nobody gets in, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Fought for the belt in three different weight classes, was the champion at lightweight, of course, mm-hmm. took out BJ Penn, trilogies with BJ, Gray Maynard, he fought Jose Aldo, we beat Charles Oliveira. I mean, mm-hmm. the people on his resume, unbelievable. Congratulations to Frankie Edgar. And then lastly, Tatiana Suarez. She's out of her fight. Who was she meant to be fighting? She had a good fight. Who was
she was Harry, supposed Harry to Bone? Fight...
This is your domain.
Lemos. She was supposed to fight Lemos. And that one, man, and then they put in, instead of, because Tatiana was hurt, now she's fighting Mackenzie Dern, which I don't like that much. I just feel like, because Mackenzie, she just fought, who did Mackenzie just fight?
Madison Square Garden. Who was it?
Yes. We were there.
Oh, man, she got dropped Andrage. A few times.
Andrage, yeah. So she has a tough fight with Andrage. She just, I don't know. Like, sometimes I don't know. Sometimes the prize that people get for things sucks. Like, you kind of want to see her be able to build herself back up. Let's get her, you know, let her work on her striking. Let's get some defense in. Let's let her, it seems like personally, she's kind of going through some turmoil. So like her life maybe is a little bit of out of sorts and she's not like real dialed in to her schedule with training and having the kid and this other stuff she's got going on. It's none of my business, but she talked about it. So I bring it up, but, and then instead of like being able to kind of work her way back in, get her into a fight that's super competitive, that, you know, is safe for her to kind of work through some shit, she gets Lemos, and Lemos is a goddamn killer.
This is the guy that says that Strickland should fight Hamzat Chimaev next.
That's fair. That's fair. That's what I mean. I kind of went against my own rule there, but yeah, it's just tough. I wanted to see Mackenzie, you know, bounce back and because I think she's got a lot of, I don't know. I think she got a lot of skills and I think she can do really, really well.
She does. She's a great girl as well. And then, of course, final bit of news. Looks like we could be getting, well, Darren Till is hoping for it. Darren Till versus Mike Perry, bare knuckle fighting championships. I'd love to see that. That's a fight long overdue. I just want to see Darren Till getting back in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to see Darren just back fighting. You know, I think the whole entire combat sports community is better when Darren Till's fighting. I love when he's in a great place, you know, and when he's on, he's on. Like, he's one of the best in the world when he's on.
And he's a funny bastard as well. So it gives us a reason to get him onto the podcast and something to talk about. And if you want to get onto the podcast, then all you got to do is send an email to bympod@gmail.com. You send in a video question for Anthony or I. I was going to say Harrington O'Brien, but no, we'll leave it at that. If you've got a question for me or Anthony, send it in to bympod@gmail.com.
And if you're listening on Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, make sure to subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps out on those platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new video drops. And if you want to catch over 500 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free and totally uncensored, head to gasdigital.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 7-day free trial. Check over 20 great shows.
All right. So today, our first question here is from Mark O'Reagan. And this one by far has the best production value.
Hey, Mark from London here. With Du Plessis getting his belt, do we think we need to revise Darren Till's final few fights? Tyron Woodley, ex-champion. Jorge Masvidal, BMF champion. Derek Brunson, he was on a 4-fight win streak at the time, and his previous loss was to Israel Adesanya. Then he lost to Robert Whittaker, the Reaper, and interim champion. And who was Darren Till's final fight? The new champion, Du Plessis. Everyone writing off Darren Till. Darren, come back, mate. You've just lost to a bunch of champions. Harrington, fuck you.
Well, thank you very much for the question. That's what I've been saying all along, you know, and certainly that last loss to Du Plessis has aged very, very well. Ray's a close fight with Robert Whittaker. I mean, I don't need to say it. He just went through it all. That's what I've been saying for years. And I still think Darren's got a lot left in the tank to come back. I mean, we spoke to him. We interviewed him when he was deciding to leave the UFC. You know? And he hasn't done anything yet. I hope I haven't spoken to him either. You know, I mean, we used to keep in contact. We just haven't shared a text or anything. Ooh, a couple of polite hellos or whatever, but I have no idea what he's doing. So I wish him well, but yeah, what do you think of that?
I totally agree. You know, we've talked about that. I think you've been Darren Till's biggest supporter and cheerleader, just not in, in defending him, because he's been in there with so many tough, tough guys and just been in so many tough fights, but everybody's good. He's not been beaten by anybody bad. So, you know, I totally agree, and you should check in on him. See how
I think I texted him recently, but I just mean I haven't seen him and had a proper sit down, a proper conversation, right. And you know what I mean, as friends, like a little hello, how you doing, mate, or respond to his Instagram story or some shit like that, which is always something wild and crazy.
Right.
But yeah, shout out Darren Till. Come back to the sport, mate. We need you. And I would love to see him and Mike Perry, two great guys, two good fighters. Oh, yeah. Bringing it on, come on. Brian.
All right. So next one we have is from Luis Hernandez about judging.
Hey, what's up, guys? I watched the fights last night. I think Strickland won. I don't think he got robbed. You know, Du Plessis did just enough to win it. But what do you guys think about implementing 5 judges for championship fights in the UFC? You have 4 judges seated throughout the octagon, and that 5th judge, you have him off-site watching, you know, with the athletic commission, someone from the UFC, you know, and with the officiating crew there. And that way you get that, you know, it's just another perspective from watching the fight. This is something that is done in professional baseball, professional soccer, football, and I believe the NBA. What do you guys think about implementing that, an offsite official for, you know, for championship fights at least? Or, you know, maybe we can test it out at the Apex or something. I don't know. What do you guys think? Let me know.
Well, first of all, thank you for the question. He's asking, what do we think about 5 judges? I'm going to go one better. 6 judges. Let's do 6.
6.
It's a joke. Like, have you seen the film? There's something about Mary. Have you seen that?
A long time ago. I actually have seen that one a long time
6
ago.
6-minute abs. know, I've got a business idea. You want to come in on it? What is it? 4-minute abs. He's like, what do you mean 4-minute abs? Were you seeing 6-minute abs? I'm going to do 4-minute abs. Have you seen? Step into my office. Why? Because you're fucking fired. Whatever. Anyway.
I haven't. I've seen it a long time ago.
Anyone that's seen it, they know what I'm talking about right now. It's a very, very well-known film. Harrington O'Brien, I would have expected a little bit of backup there. We're going to talk about this later. In fact, Brian Harrington, step into my office.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because you're fucking fired. Fired.
Something About Mary is not one of my favorite movies. I haven't seen it too many times.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, dude. Harlan Williams, dude, he's the man.
Yeah.
You can't even get a sweat in he's the guy. He's the 6-minute abs guy. Yeah. You can't even get a sweat in 5 minutes. That's crazy. That's ridiculous. Yeah. 6 minutes, though. That's sweet spot.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That's the quote I was looking for. Thank you very much. Do you know what? Or believer there that sent in the question, he might be onto something, because the judge, we have 3 judges, and it's kind of a system that's been implemented for a long time. Mm-hmm. The judges don't get to see the strike count. The judges don't get to see the instant replay. The judges don't get to see what's going on between the corner. I'm not necessarily against the people judging the outcome of these fights that ultimately determines whose effort and career is going to be paid better. You know, like, you make all that sacrifice in a fight and then the wrong decision's awful. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You got to make money. The outcome is so important. We know this. So why can't we arm those people with better information to come to the right conclusion?
Right. Give them more information. I think the argument to that would be a lot of people don't believe that they're smart enough to do their job as they're directed now. If we give them more information, that they're going to struggle with that, with more input. I'm not one of those people, but that would be the argument. Mm. I've also always thought we should have 2 referees, always. Like when you go into like the NCAA wrestling finals, like that.
3 referees.
And when you watch wrestling at the D1 level, like when they're wrestling in the like in the finals, there's always 2 referees on the mat, always to get different angles.
They have the review official, now in most states, I believe. So they have obviously the referee in the octagon, you know, watching everything. And if there's something that maybe they couldn't see, they stop it, time out. And then they go and look at the tape and the review official looks at it. For example, could have said that that was a clash of heads with Strickland and Duplessis. I don't know if it was. I'm not saying that, but he could have spotted that and maybe got the judges to discount that damage. Perhaps, you know,
but and they do try to do that. And they do try to do that during the fight, though, because when Khalil,
but the judges don't get told, though. I mean, okay,
When Khalil, when he came in and he came into the clinch, and he banged right on my eyebrow, and I was cut, and I remember like wiping, and I had blood, and the referee said that was from a headbutt, and I just nodded, like I agreed, like yeah, I know. So then he starts going to the referees or to the judges and saying, the cut was caused by an inadvertent accidental headbutt. So they didn't stop the fight. But a lot of times if you'll see Herb Dean, a cut will happen from a punch and he'll say it was caused from a punch and let the judges know that.
Yeah, and that's beautiful refereeing. So well done to Mark Smith for that. Just finally on this then, let's talk about this because we're talking about judging and refereeing. And if you're still with us at the end of the show, thank you all for being here. Arnold Allen, Movsar Evloev, first fight of the night on the pay-per-view main card. Movsar Evloev looks tremendous. He got the job done. I was gutted for Arnold Allen. He's such a nice guy, and he's a great fighter. I thought Arnold looked spectacular. I thought he looked really good. He looked smooth. The takedown defense, the scrambling, the Granby rolls, the ability to get back to the feet, the boxing, the footwork. He looked smooth. He looked world championship caliber. Yeah. He was just beaten by a very good opponent that was just a little bit better on Saturday night, sadly.
Well, it went downhill when he got dropped with that jab. He struggled after that.
You're absolutely right. He did. He started getting a little bit more wild and a little bit more desperate there. Ah, you're right, Anthony. That's a good take there. But I wanted to talk about the headlock situation. Remember when referee Mark Goddard stepped in? And I want to clarify, I'm not talking shit about Mark Goddard. He's an old friend of mine, and he's a brilliant referee. What was your thoughts on that whole situation there?
In real time, because it happened right in front of me, in real time, they look cleaner. The first two or three, because it looked like he was lifting him up, and it was just I was sitting right by Movsar's corner, and they freaked out right away. But then when they watched the replay, they're like, he's playing that game. Like they weren't as upset after seeing the replay as they were initially. So it did look like he was lifting it up and throwing the knee at the same time. I think like the third or fourth one was clearly like a downed opponent. But Canada, the athletic commission didn't adopt the new rule where it has to be weight bearing. If that's in Vegas or that's one legal. Of the other, that's a legal shot. Yeah, that's a legal shot in
that's
most commissions
a
right now.
Legal shot or that's illegal shot.
That is a legal shot.
Yeah, and you know what? Listen, we know this. The referees come backstage and they break down precisely, sometimes ad nauseum, what the rules are in this territory that you're in. And they do a very, very good job of that. But even still in the heat of the moment, it's hard for the fighters to know. Different states, different areas, different countries, you know, there's a slight difference in the rules. You know what I mean? It should just be across the board. If you can do that, you can do that. If you can't do that, you can't do that. And I do believe that Arnold Allen had some really good momentum in that moment. It was stopped. Goddard probably did the right thing there.
Yeah.
But that's that could have been, you never know, the beginning of a finish for Arnold Allen.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a big moment. I thought Arnold Allen did a great job battling back, though. He got dropped. He had a tough rest of that round. I know that Dana said it sucked the air out of the arena. I actually thought it was a pretty good fight. I enjoyed it a lot.
Said.
Yeah, he said it was boring, but I actually thought it was a really, really good fight. But, you know, yeah. I'm a nerd. Like, I'm into the details, and Movsar is like, he's amazing in some of those transitions and the way that he shoots, his timing on his takedowns. I thought they both looked really, really good. I really enjoyed that fight, actually. So I felt bad when Dana said that.
No, I enjoyed it as well. Obviously, you know, I know Arnold personally. He's a great guy, really humble. Here's a situation for you. How would you feel about this? I don't know what year this is going to take place in the future. 125, Muhammad Makhachev is champion.
Mm-hmm.
I'll come back to 35. 145, Mavsayev Luev is champion. 55, mm-hmm. Islam Makhachev is champion. 170, we need a 170. 185, Hamzat Chimaev is champ.
Shavkat,
170 right. Champ. 205, Magomed Ankalaev. And then heavyweight. Someone at heavyweight. Everybody yeah. is from Dagestan.
It's possible.
it's possible. Stop signing them.
Yeah, get rid of them. Send them back over to M1. Get them out of here.
The Russian Muslims. They train too hard, man. They're too dedicated.
Yeah, they're too goddamn good.
They're too goddamn good. Anyway, that's it. That's the show. Thanks for watching. We'll be back on Monday.